SA's number one digital station.
Two Oceans Vibe Radio.
Well, as promised, we have a fairly controversial figure in the studio right now. His name is Stephen Birch. He's a South African, and he is variously accused of either being a troublemaker, or some people would call him a crusader. We're all fascinated by the Madeleine McCann story. It's now, I think it's 5 years later, he's trying to champion the cause and actually put the case to rest and find the body. Stephen, welcome to Ocean's Vibe.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks for having me.
Now, Stephen, you're a South African guy. You're in the building industry. How do you get to a position where you take 2 years off of work in this quest? How did this case touch you in such a way that you're making this degree of a sacrifice?
Well, you know, it's not something that one plans. It was a natural progression. Initially, the case was introduced to me. I was told about the case one evening. And then I happened to see a YouTube video of Madeleine with her siblings, Sean and Emily. And something about the little girl touched me, and I became interested in the case. And then I looked at another YouTube video of the head of the Portuguese police, a gentleman by the name of Gonçalo Amaral. And there was a six-part YouTube video called The Truth of the Lie. And it was in Portuguese with English subtitles. And I watched it and I became intrigued and at the statements and the degree of complexity that the case had developed into.
Now, straight off the bat, I want to ask you, and I know that you're certainly not alone in this. It became a worldwide phenomenon and probably still is. But why do you think this case, there are so many children that go missing in the world on a daily basis, why do you think this case is so special? Is it because she was so cute?
Well, certainly the profile of the parents being both professional, good-looking, athletic people, and their daughter being a really pretty little girl helped in the media or the way the story was projected worldwide. A lot of people have asked me that question. I also believe that there's a very strong media contingent coming out of the UK. And with Madeleine being of British descent, I'm sure it really helped the cause.
Yeah, I mean, it is a mystery that persists to this day. Now, your involvement in this, obviously, you said initially it's just something that touched you, but how does that translate into what some people are now calling an obsession? I mean, there are a lot of crackpots out there. There are a lot of people who are saying, this is what I think happened. How do you defend yourself against those kind of... Because, I mean, you know that you're facing that. How do you defend yourself against those kind of claims?
I don't think you can really defend yourself. I think at the end of the day, you know, I grew up in a middle-class family, and one of the things we didn't have it easy as children, and one of the things that my late dad taught me was that if you start something, finish it. You know, I've done a lot of things in my life which have been very difficult tasks. I haven't had an easy life, and it's probably built character. And for me, it's about if you start a particular project, finish it. You know, there's a price to pay for it, but if you start something, make it happen, and stay focused and don't get sidetracked.
Okay, now the price that you're paying for it, you've said that you've took 2 years off and you're actually needing to start getting your nose to the grindstone again to get some cash in. How else has it affected you?
Well, it's isolated me because to a large extent, a case of this size and magnitude is all-encompassing. At one stage, I was working 7 days a week, 14 hours a day, analyzing every single detail of the case. I must say that I've been told that I have extreme attention to detail. It is one of the characteristics that I have. And having just finished four major Supreme Court matters prior to me starting the case helped me with my ability to be able to analyze large volumes of details and paper. It's a mindset, and it's the 4 years that I spent in the High Court certainly conditioned my mind to be able to deal with very specific facts and details that maybe somebody else would gloss over.
Okay, now you are claiming to have found a burial site. It's not 100% that it's Madeline, but you're saying it's worth looking because why not?
That's correct. I mean, you know, for me, I believe the crime occurred in Praia da Luz. It's not a worldwide crime. It's a localized crime. And all the evidence points to the fact that the remains of Madeline McCann lie buried in Praia da Luz. As much as people don't want to believe it and would like to believe that she's alive and possibly in Scotland or England or on a plane to Germany, the remains of that little girl lie buried in Praia da Luz. And it's as simple as that. It's actually quite a simple crime.
How have you discovered what sort of trained experts in forensics and everything else weren't able to do? What have you done that they couldn't?
Well, first of all, I'm not a forensic expert. So the findings of Dr. Goncalo Amaral, I had to adopt those findings that occurred in the flat. For me to go out and say that that I have an extensive knowledge on what occurred in Flat 5A in the Ocean Club, from where Madeline disappeared, is crazy. My focus was totally on the fact on what happened to Madeline after she was taken or after she was removed from that flat. So to a large extent, initially, the groundwork was done by the Portuguese police. There's a tremendous amount of work having been done by the Portuguese police. And had those findings not been made public, I probably wouldn't have been able to solve this crime.
Okay, now you say solve the crime. Her parents are still claiming that she's alive. Without implicating yourself in anything, what is, to the people who are like-minded as you are, that she is buried somewhere, what is your interpretation of what happened that night? Because, I mean, that's what people want to know. If she isn't alive, how do you know? How did events occur that night?
Well, I believe that Madeline died, first of all, in the flat by accident. There is sufficient proof that the little girl climbed up a couch and fell over the back of the couch and possibly broke her neck. The forensics show that there was blood splatter behind the couch, there were various other sightings that occurred in and around Praia da Luz within specific time frames that lead me to believe that she is buried in Praia da Luz. The first thing that I did was, when I started the investigation, I created a hypothesis. Having limited financial resources and being only one person, I needed to create a hypothesis, and I felt that if I wasn't able to prove the hypothesis, I would withdraw from the case. Taking a motor vehicle out of an equation, that this is a localized crime and that the crime occurred within walking distance, suddenly time becomes very relevant. Every minute, every 5 minutes, every 3 minutes. And one can start mapping and you can layer certain things on top of each other.
Now, I just want to interrupt you there. You say taking a motor vehicle out of the equation, but there was blood that was found, from what I understand, there was blood that was found in the boot of their hired car.
Well, you know, I think that's where, I know that's where Gonçalo Amaral, the head of the Portuguese police, made his biggest mistake. I remember standing at the Lisbon airport and telling the reporter that I agree with Mr. Amaral in his findings, but I just had quite a long flight. And one of the things that where Mr. Amaral and myself differ is that I've said from the onset that Madeline, she died on the 3rd of May and she was buried on the 3rd of May. The DNA evidence that was found in the McCann hire car, the Scenic, that vehicle was only hired 25 days after Madeline went missing. And it's my belief that the Portuguese police, or let me go back, the frustrated Portuguese police, planted DNA evidence in that motor vehicle, trying to pin the case on the McCanns. They believed that the infant was buried in or around in the area, and being frustrated, they went and planted DNA evidence in that motor vehicle.
So that was a red herring?
Most definitely.
And would they have used the blood that they found behind the couch for that? I mean, was it hers?
Well, one can only speculate. I have certain theory on how they got hold of that DNA. I am in discussions with certain people who are assisting me with regard to that finding. I can't go into that discussion at the moment. The planting of the DNA by the Portuguese police immediately created a diplomatic crisis. The British stepped in, the agents established that the DNA was printed, and both presidents at that time, both prime ministers, Gordon Brown and José Sócrates of Portugal, got together and decided to close the case prematurely 15 months after it opened. I'm under correction, but I think the case closed in June of 2008. Fernando Pinto Monteiro, the Attorney General for Portugal, shut the case immediately.
Why would they do that? Why would that be in their interest to shut it down?
Well, you have a very, very sensitive situation developing where you have Portuguese police planting DNA. You have the Portuguese telling the British that they believe that their citizen has buried their child in or around in the area. So you have a very heated situation developing. Portugal has a long history with England. It's a very good history. It dates back to 1388 when Spain wanted to invade Portugal. The King of Portugal went to England, France and Holland at the time and formed allies with those three countries to protect Portugal. Today the French-English allegiance still exists. There's a lot of trade between the two countries. You have the British coming down to the Algarve area and spending a tremendous amount of money on holidays and on accommodation and tourism. And you have the Portuguese acquiring British and French motor vehicles. I remember seeing a lot of Renault vehicles, which we don't even get in our country. So there's a very, very close relationship between the countries. And to have a situation like this develop is not in the interest of the country, certainly not.
Okay, just backtracking slightly, the people who like you who believe that she fell off the back of a couch and broke her neck, as her body hasn't been found, what is that based on? What is that assessment of the blood spatter? Is that consistent with somebody breaking their neck? When you could break your neck and have no blood?
Well, as I said to you before, what occurred inside that flat, that apartment, I can't really comment on. I had to adopt the findings of Mr. Amaral.
And was that his finding that she'd fallen?
Those were his findings, and a group of detectives who I believe were very competent and seasoned investigators. So it is very possible that that a young child falling forward and smashing or snapping her head, that blood could have lodged from her nasal cavity and appeared on the wall, and you know, I wasn't in the apartment, so I have to adopt those findings.
Okay, now let's jump ahead a little bit. There's extensive searching for the body. Nothing is found. You then, I believe, learnt about some very, very advanced technological equipment for searching the ground. Sort of, tell me about how you went into that and how you went and actually searched. Because I believe you didn't get permission first. It was a bit of a trespass, from what I understand and what I've read. A bit of casing the joint and going in and doing a bit of your own research. How did that happen?
Well, when I was in South Africa, after having completed my investigation and having come to my findings that, that the child could be only buried in two places, one in the Murat property or two in the botanical gardens. Both were within the time frames and within close proximity to the apartment. I then consulted with somebody who advised me that I needed to be able to use ground-penetrating radar equipment. I got hold of an expert in the field, and this person trained me on how to use what's called a Marlow ground-penetrating radar machine. The machine, the equipment, well, Marlow is a very well-known company. It's been around since the early 40s, and there are many companies that make ground-penetrating equipment, but Marlow certainly is the leader in the market. And I was taught for a period of 2 months how to locate bodies. I took the machine to the Clapman's graveyard, where I underwent training on how to identify bodies. I eventually became so good that within half an hour I could locate 22 bodies underneath the ground between an area of, say, at a depth of between 2 and 2.5 meters. So, yeah, it was part of my training.
Does it look similar to those guys that you see walking along the beach finding coins and stuff, or
how
substantial is this equipment?
You do get equipment like that, but unfortunately that equipment doesn't go down to 3 meters down. The minor ground penetrating machine is very similar to your average garden lawnmower. It has wheels, it has a base, it has a handlebars, and it has an LED screen which is connected to a battery pack and a scanner which is housed between the wheels. Yeah.
Okay, so you fly over to Portugal with this in your luggage. That must have raised some eyebrows at customs.
Well, no. In actual fact, what I first did was through the South African connection, I hired the machine via London. And not having an EU passport, I couldn't fly with this type of equipment. Could you imagine arriving at the airport and with a 120,000 rand ground penetrating radar machine, and the customs gentleman says to you, what's the purpose of your visit? And you say, well, I'm here on holiday. No, I first flew to London on the 14th and 15th, where I paid for the hire of the machine. Luckily for me, the gentleman in London, the South African gentleman vouched for me, and he'd already sent the machine via DHL from London to Praia da Luz. And I was very happy about that, because by the time that I got to Praia da Luz, the machine was already there. So all I did was I paid him for the hire of the machine. It was £350 a day. It cost me about 18,500 rand for 3 days. And then I spent 2 days in London meeting with my attorneys from DLA Piper, certainly one of the biggest legal firms in the UK. And then on the 16th, the morning of the 16th, I flew out of Heathrow to Lisbon, where I met my crew flying up from South Africa with more equipment. We brought in a Rotherberger underground camera, and we brought in surveillance equipment. In hindsight, I was quite sorry that we couldn't have brought other equipment in. We did bring in certain little cameras and stuff, which we still have some in place. But we would have liked to bring in more equipment, but it would have been a problem getting it through customs. But in future, if we ever do an operation like this again, we'll DHL everything way in advance, you know.
Okay, so you're there, you've got the equipment, you don't get permission. Was it a bit of a nighttime mission?
Well, let me first tell you that the 2 weeks were probably the most nerve-wracking of my entire life. It was, people think it's a holiday, it was a very nerve-wracking experience. The first 4 days, I had booked an apartment called Fuji Palms 10. I knew that Fuji Palms 10 looked straight into the Murat property. It was on the second floor. So by the time that we got there and we took occupation of our apartment, we were able to do surveillance through the bedroom window and out the balcony, which covered the side street that provided the access or the entry point into the Murat property. And the first thing we did was we set up time-lapse cameras, which basically takes photographs every second. And we were able to see the comings and goings of the inhabitants of the house. Mr. Robert Murat, who initially lived there and who was the initial Oguido, doesn't live there. He's living in Lagos with his new son, who's 2 years old, and his wife, Mikaela, and her child from her previous marriage. There are Robert's mother stays with some people in their house, Jenny Murat. She, at the time, was 71 when Madeline went missing. Today, she's 76, still fit and walks around, yeah.
So you waited for an opportunity when you knew that the coast was clear. You go into the property with your equipment, and you claim to have found an area where you can see that some excavation was done and that there are some bones, some remains, although it's not absolutely clear from the equipment what that is. Correct me if I'm wrong in any stage here. You then report this. You send your findings through. Why have they not dug up? If your claims are as strong as they seem to be, why have the Portuguese authorities, who were so frustrated by not finding the remains, why have they not instituted the search?
Okay, well, let me first go back one little step, and that is, we didn't go into the property once, we went in the property four times.
I was trying to help you out here.
Yeah, sorry. If I'm going to go to jail, I'm going to go to jail. I went into the property four times. And a tremendous amount of time was spent configuring the machine and getting the machine to be highly accurate, so much so that the findings were, and the configuration and the setting of what we call the hyperbola on the machine, was very, very accurate. So the scanning occurred between 5 o'clock and 6 o'clock in the morning, with me first scanning in one particular direction and then scanning perpendicular in the other direction. So we got a full grid of that entire driveway. Those findings were sent first to South Africa and then to the UK, where specialists confirmed that something definitely lays buried beneath that driveway. Initially, before we went to Portugal, I conducted certain tests on a farm outside Cape Town where ground conditions were very similar to that in Portugal. I had photographs of the ground conditions in Portugal sent through to me. And it's a very similar to what we call coffee clip here. And doing tests, and I got an employer of mine to dig a hole within a 15-minute period, which is the period that I believe that the hole was dug. And we only got to a depth of 450 millimeters, which is not very deep. It's less than half a meter. So we knew going to Portugal the hole or the grave was 450 millimeters deep. What we didn't know was how deep was the topsoil on top of. And we estimated it would be between, say, 150 and 200 mils. So if you take 150 millimeters to 200 millimeters and you put that on top of 450 millimeters, you're looking for a hole or a cavity 650 millimeters below that driveway. And that's exactly what we found.
Now, when you say driveway, what is it composed of? Is it just sort of soil and rock, or is it? It's not paved, so you wouldn't be able to see where an area was dug up. It's just ground.
The driveway in itself is suspicious, and I'll tell you what it's constructed of. It's basically a small retaining brick wall, and it has gravel on top of it, what we call G5 or your normal gravel driveway. What's interesting about the gravel is that I initially cleared the stone away with my hand and tried to dig. On the fourth time I went into the property, I tried to excavate to get to the body, and I hit a small layer of tar, which is very hard, which I find extremely unusual to have a layer of tar underneath a gravel driveway. So we don't have a cement driveway or a brick driveway, as was incorrectly reported in the press. We have a simple little gravel driveway. What is interesting about this particular driveway is that on the northern side of the property is a massive driveway which is paved with four parking garages, or two parking garages and two carports. And the interesting thing is that Robert Murat's mother, Jenny Murat, doesn't drive a car. So yeah, you have a massive driveway on the northern side, on the front door of the property, four garages, an old lady who doesn't drive a motor vehicle, and suddenly you get a new driveway, a small little driveway where you can hardly turn a vehicle, being constructed a year after Madeline disappears out of gravel. And it's that particular driveway that pricked my interest.
So subsequent to her being buried, that area above where she is supposedly buried has been tarred and then gravel put on top of it.
Correct.
And that's all happened since then.
Well, I believe that driveway occurred sometime in, that driveway was manufactured sometime in 2008. There was a hole knocked in the wall at the back of the property to provide new entrance gates to this driveway. But at the time when the police searched the property, there was no gates in the back of the property and there was no driveway.
Okay, before we take a quick break for the music, why aren't the Portuguese police excavating it?
I believe that the Portuguese police now know that Madeleine is buried there, and this is a diplomatic crisis for them.
Something I'd like to ask you about is the from what I've read as well in the back of this, is that the McCann family, they're conflicting things. It was like now, it seemed like they directed the Portuguese police in the direction of the Murat residence and almost sort of blaming Mr. Murat for being the abductor. But there's the flip side of that where they're saying that she's still alive. So those two don't really go together, do they?
Well, it's a natural, it's time that's elapsed. And it's, I've got to be very careful what I say. I don't want to get a libel case against myself. I believe the McCanns are taking legal action against quite a few people. A representative of the McCanns PR company threatened a reporter that did the story on me from the Huffington Post. So I've got to be very, very careful what I say. What I want to say is that the Tapas Nine, being the group comprising of Kate and Jerry McCann and their friends, felt that, whether it's true or not, that Mr. Robert Murat had something to do with the abduction. Kate McCann wrote in her diary 6 months after Robert Murat had been cleared that she felt that this man had something to do with the abduction of her child. Jane Tanner, a friend of the wife of Russell O'Brien, stated to the police that Robert Murat was the abductor. The police, as a result of the statements made by the Tapas Nine, felt it necessary to go and search the entire Murat property. I have my theory as to what occurred. They went through the entire property. They searched the yard. They went into the basement. They found Roman ruins. They pumped all the water out of the swimming pool. They went through Robert Murat's computer. I personally believe they missed a child. They missed a child by 60 centimeters. Not difficult in a yard that big. The property is 36 meters by about 24 meters, the back of the property. It's heavily overgrown at that particular stage. And it would be very easy for them to miss a child 90 centimeters tall, folded in half, 45 centimeters. They initially went in on a Sunday evening, and if I was a government employee working for the police, I wouldn't be that keen on a Sunday evening to take a spade and start digging. And they then went in on the Monday. I know the Sunday had rained. So I think, and this is what I really, really believe, is that the Portuguese police went into that yard and missed the child in the yard. As a result of them missing the child, Robert Murat was cleared as an arguido, which is the Portuguese word for suspect. He got paid £600,000 by Sky News. The McCanns received money from various newspapers, which they took legal action against for falsely accusing them. Their fund has grown significantly in wealth. The fund's called the No Stones Unturned. And Kate has sold in excess of 350,000 books called Madeleine. The book's called Madeleine. I believe that there might be a second book in the making. So as a result of the police having missed the child, everybody's got rich. And even members of the Tapas Nine have been paid out money. I don't know. They've made statements that they've paid the money to the Madeleine Foundation. I don't know whether they've kept the money or not kept the money. But the McCanns have become a household name. They've been put on the front page of every single newspaper in the UK. And certainly as a selling item for the Sun newspaper and for the Rupert Murdoch group, they've been a very, very great asset.
Okay. Let me just sum up the course of events as you possibly believe that they happened. They went out to dinner. They left the kids in the apartment. Madeline might have had some degree of sedation. For whatever reason, she climbs up onto the back of the couch, falls, breaks her neck, and dies. So there's at no point in your theory is there foul play in causing her death. So she falls, she breaks her neck. They then need to cover up this occurrence because it shows a gross negligence on their part. So having somebody abduct the child is better than having her fall and break her neck. Her father takes her, runs down the road to the Murat residence, which is nearby, buries her. Then when the search starts, they direct the Portuguese police to that property, hoping that she will be found, the body will be found, which will then close the case and the guilt would fall on Murat. And if he goes to prison, that's fine. They weren't worried about that. They were worried about her being found, close the case, go back to England. Is that sort of, in a nutshell, the theory?
Mark, I'm not going to comment.
Okay, all right. So, I mean, I'm just putting the like sort of puzzle pieces out there, and I'm trying to sort of create a picture of that. Okay, we'll move on from that then, and the Portuguese authorities. That's where we touched on just before we took that music break. The Portuguese authorities have this information from you. They haven't acted on it yet. Because it's a diplomatic issue
it's a massive diplomatic issue. Let me tell you the extent to which I've gone. First of all, the Portuguese police have been instructed not to talk to me under any circumstances. From Dr. Ana Paula Rita to Manuela Santos, to the Attorney General, to the President of the Algarve, Dr. Julio Barroso, to the Prime Minister that I've written to. I've written to the President, the Prime Minister, the entire Cabinet, the Attorney General, the Minister, the Justice Minister, and I've been on the front page of their biggest newspaper, Correio da Manhã, 5 times. Now, it's been 60 days since my findings. So we have a simple gravel driveway over here, and they've closed shop completely. I've got the Prime Minister having sent me a letter yesterday saying that the head of the Portuguese police is saying that they searched the property using equipment from the University of Aveiro, which is completely a lie, because I've got photographs showing that they failed to search that particular property, and it was impossible in that sector where Madeline is buried to have actually used that equipment. And they have a big problem now, because the Prime Minister now has a very, very big problem in having to deal with this lie and this cover-up. And they're actually sacrificing one of their own Portuguese citizens, which is Gonçalo Amaral, who's currently in a major court battle with the McCanns at the moment, who are suing him for £1.2 million, a libel case, for his book, The Truth of the Lie. So you have a situation over here where diplomatic relationship with England become more important than the citizens of Portugal. And that for me is a big problem, because when you don't have justice, then you don't have a true sovereignty. And unless Portugal implement justice and get this child out the ground and run this case properly, then Portugal is not a true sovereignty, in my opinion.
If they don't, what's next?
Well,
are you going to go and dig her up?
Well,
how far from that are you?
Mark, I'll tell you after a couple of whiskeys. What I will tell you is that I have time on my side, and time is a very dangerous thing, because when you have time on your side and you have capabilities, I'm looking for people to come and join my campaign. I have a YouTube video, Stephen Birch, Madeline McCann, where my email address is, and I'm looking for people to come and assist me in getting that YouTube video out to the UK, because the UK have closed shop on that. I will spend in time to come millions of rand getting that YouTube video into the world, to the various countries, to inform them about this cover-up, because this cover-up cannot continue. And when you have time on your side and you have ability and you have people that want the truth to come out, there are many people that are sitting at home that have had enough of this. They know the truth and they want the truth to be revealed. And I'm sure there's some people out there. I'm hoping that there are a couple of people out there that will contact me and say, Stephen, we'll help you with your cause to expose the truth.
Surely it would cost less than several millions to buy the Murat house. house and excavate it yourself?
Many people have made that suggestion, and I can assure you Mr. Robert Murat will not sell me that property. I've already written to him asking whether I can dig up his driveway, and his attorney, Mr. Pagaretis, has categorically told me that he won't allow me near that property.
And they won't sell?
They won't sell.
The intrigue continues. Ms. Birch, thank you so much for coming and joining us. It is a fascinating story. You are in the middle, I think, of a campaign. It's far from over. I wish you well with your endeavors, and hopefully one day this can be put to rest.
Mark, thank you very much for having me.
Two Oceans Vibe Radio, from Cape Town to the world. From Cape Town to the world.